Hi everyone, and welcome to Palestine Exists, a space where we deep dive into all things Palestine, from history and politics to culture, resistance, and the stories that deserve to be told. If you've ever felt overwhelmed by the headlines, frustrated by misinformation, or just eager to learn more about Palestine beyond the mainstream narrative, this is the place for you. As always, I'm Petra, and we have Hiba here. Hi, Habuba.
Hi, Patura. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm okay. Let's have you know, some quick little banter before we dive into the horror show. What's your red flag? Mine, personally, is thinking international law still applies to everyone equally. How about you?
I guess mine is like the UN was supposed to be built to, you know, stop a genocide instead of making it continue, you know. Just
cute. So we're both delusional. Perfect. Literally.
Oh my gosh. Apparently so.
So today we're tracing what happens when a child is not just imprisoned but repurposed, not just broken but studied. We're looking at the case of Ahmad Manasra and what it reveals about how settler states weaponize the category of childhood itself. Who gets to have one? Who gets it revoked? And what gets tested when a Palestinian boy survives something he wasn't supposed to? Mm-hmm. This isn't just a story about detention or due process. It's about how the Israeli legal system rehearses its violence through the body of a minor, how solitary confinement becomes a site for engineering schizophrenia, how memories extracted, rewritten, and then used as evidence. And in this episode, we're asking very specific questions. Like, what does it mean when the law doesn't fail a child, but functions exactly as designed? Or what happens when a precedent is not set through legislation, but the slow dismantling of one single boy? And how do we confront the fact that under international law, torture, disappearance, and psychological collapse are still permissible, as long as they're done in increments and to the right population?
Yeah. You ate that. I couldn't have said it any better if I tried. But like, this is Ahmad Manasra. It's a name I feel like everyone who knows anything about Palestine has heard prior to October 7th, during and now, alhamdulillah.
It's an exceptional case. Sorry to cut you off, but it's because it's an exceptional case. And unfortunately, we're only, you know, remembered when we're exceptional, I guess.
100%. Yeah, exactly. Like, it wouldn't have ever made headline news if he wasn't a 13-year-old kid who was, you know, ran over. And I want everyone to know this has been such a hard thing for me and Hiba to even think about doing. It was hard. I think it was like the last episode when we even brought him up. We're like, no, don't do it. I can't think about him. And alhamdulillah, he's been released. Unfortunately, justice hasn't been served for him. And we'll, you know, deep dive a little bit into it. But it is such an important case because I feel like,
and if you're listening and like you already know all there is. You know, and there's, you can only do so much research on one person, and everybody has been, but I hope you stick around because we do different like analyses. We talk about it, how we talk about him and how he, you know, we break it down structurally. And it's like, mostly we're talking about like how Israel made an example out of him, out of his body, his silence, and his survival. And it's not just about what happened to him. It's about what was tested through him. And yeah, I don't know, I think it's important to understand, I don't know, to stick around and maybe hear the analyses that we offer. So
yeah, 100%. I mean, just starting off, so we're going to talk briefly about his early childhood. There wasn't much to figure out from his early childhood. Pretty much his whole family, himself and the lawyer, are all put on like a gag order. They basically cannot speak according to the Israeli government. Yeah, so there wasn't much to find out about his early childhood. All we really know is he was born in 2002 in a small village in East Jerusalem called Beit Hanina. He grew up under the shadows of Israeli occupation, which obviously affected his daily life as a Palestinian through restrictions, surveillance, systematic discrimination. Obviously, this isn't unique to Ahmad. This is what every single Palestinian under occupation goes through. But he was, you know, surrounded by frequent confrontations, always military presence on the land, and limited freedom of movement. I feel like the mentality of a child going through that can, it deeply affects them and it shapes who they are as a person. I think that's something we, you know, as Palestinians in diaspora, don't fully have a grasp on with their day-to-day life, you know, right. Like me. Yeah.
Sorry. So like, just, it's like a really important that we talk about like where this, like where he grew up and why, right? Because like proximity is key here, right? So Beit Hanina is, it sits on the seam line between Palestinian Jerusalem and the Israeli, Pisgah Ze'ev settlement.
Illegal settlement.
Yes. Which is where the incident took place. And proximity, like I said, is key. It means Ahmad didn't grow up in like a Palestinian neighborhood the way that people who, when they think about the West Bank, might understand it. He grew up in like a daily collision site, which means like constant settler foot traffic, checkpoints on your freaking sidewalks, Israeli light rail cutting through like just all the time, settler security forces in plain clothes. School routes that become surveillance corridors, and basically like he grew up in a childhood that he spent learning that like normal isn't always watching you, is always watching you, and it's never yours.
Yeah, like the mentality of a child living through that, I could never imagine a child living through that or growing up, you know, seeing as soon as they wake up, oh, there's probably, you know, military personnel all over your neighborhood. Here's another settler who's coming and yelling and cursing at you and saying death to all Arabs. So that was, you know,
like laughing about a baby being burned to death.
Yeah, that was their day-to-day life. So that's pretty much, you know, his early childhood.
Can I add one more thing about East Jerusalem?
Of course, go, Habibti.
Okay, sorry. Is this because we need to remember that when we talk about, like, obviously, occupation, apartheid, all of these things, that we need to remember that East Jerusalem children hold permanent residency status, not citizenship. That means, like, they grow up knowing that once they eventually turn of voting age, they won't be able to vote in national elections, that their residency can and will be revoked at any time. And if their parents don't prove constantly that, like, the center of their life is in Jerusalem, they can risk being deported. And what is that? Like I want everyone to sit and, like sit down with that thought and think about like what that does to a child's concept of self. It's basically they're born with papers that say you're temporary, that your very presence in this city is treated as a kind of tolerated anomaly. Like you're not supposed to be here. You know, your presence here is only temporary until something happens and then you're going to be kicked out.
Yeah, and the Israeli person living down the street, probably their mom gave birth in the same hospital as your mom. They get everything you do not get. They have citizenship when they're 18. They can vote. They have freedom. They don't have to go through military checkpoints. They can walk freely. They have guns that are literally pointed and they're walking along the street with you. But if you dare touch anything that could be perceived as a weapon, you're going to be jailed or even worse. So yeah, that's apartheid for you. Fun. But yeah, so that's how he was born and raised in his day-to-day life. So we're gonna go into the day of the incident, quote unquote. It happened in October of 2015. during this time, you know, there was already tension and violence all around Jerusalem, Al-Quds, the West Bank, Gaza. Everything was just high in tension. We're getting this very, very right, radical right. I believe every single Zionist is a right wing, but very radical. Ben-Gavir, you know, Smotrich, this is the years where they're fully talking and saying, you know, y'all all are gonna leave. This is our land. You mean nothing. They're trying to change the age of how the kids' age of when they're able to go in jail. So just this is the time of this. Ahmad, who was 13 at this time, and his 15-year-old cousin Hassan Manasra were allegedly involved in a stabbing incident. We have video evidence and surveillance of all of this. So in the surveillance videos, we see these two kids going to a gas station or like a little corner store. They're buying something. They walk out. When they're walking out, you see a security officer following them. No one knows why. They haven't done anything. They just went to a store. They come out. We don't see the quote-unquote stabbing ever, even though there's surveillance cameras everywhere. Mm-hmm. And then it flashes from what Israel has gave to us. It flashes into a video where there's two kids just running. And they have tried to say this is evidence because they're running and supposedly they have knives, which if y'all look at the surveillance, I promise you cannot find a knife. Like, wallah, and it's not me because I'm a Palestinian saying this. There was nothing in their hands. They're just running because everyone else is running. And you can see it in the surveillance. So yeah, this supposedly happened, right? Unfortunately, Hassan Manasra, who was only 15 years old, was shot and killed by Israeli forces at the scene, right? So Hiba, you've said this, and I love that you say this. Does Israel have a death penalty?
Nope, they don't. But there's extrajudicial killings, you know. But like, obviously, a democratic state wouldn't have, they wouldn't believe in like, you know, the death penalty or like, you know, state mandated murder. Of course not. They're the most democratic country in the Middle East. Come on, Petra.
And usually, right, who are the quote unquote suspects who are usually getting shot down by these Israeli forces?
Oh, obviously, like terrorists that are like, you know, skinnier than me and I'm skinny, who are holding like a rock or a sandwich or rollerblading.
So Palestinians.
Or, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sadly. Palestinian children.
Palestinian children, to be exact. Yeah. So a 15-year-old running, mind you, multiple people were running because sirens went off because there was a stabbing. They were all running. He gets shot. Point blank at the scene, he was dead, pronounced dead when they finally found someone. Ahmad, on the other hand, while he was running, an Israeli settler decided, you know what I'm going to do? I see a Palestinian child running. When sirens are going off, I'm going to go run him over.
Yep. And, fuck, okay. It's so fucked. Okay.
It is so. Yeah. I'm leaving this for you.
Okay. Everyone remembers the video. Ahmad, 13 years old, laid out on the pavement, his skull fractured, his body contorted, his blood trailing under his body like it was like punctuation marks. Settlers screaming at him, "Die, you son of a whore." They're spitting, they're laughing, they're filming.
They're kicking him. They kicked him too.
Everyone remembers that video because there was headlines, there were protests, and people said, this is the proof. This is how we know what happened to him. But what almost, like Petra, what almost never gets said is this, is that by the time that the video reached the public, he had already been declared dead. Not medically, but like Israeli media outlets ran headlines announcing his death almost immediately. And yeah, in like most cited official sources. You know, yeah, because it's, you know, a Palestinian child injured at the scene of an alleged attack, death is presumed.
That's so fucked. Bro, I never even thought of that. And obviously, in Israeli style, they blocked any ambulance from trying to help Ahmad for hours. So this taunting, this video, you can search it. Trigger warning, please. Like, if you are not in the right mental state, if you are, like, especially if you've been watching everything happening in Gaza, you know, just trigger warning, but you can search for it. This went on for hours. So a little 13-year-old boy, none of these, you know, good Israelis that we hear about, Hiba, subhanAllah, none of them in sight to try and help or stop this. They're kicking at him, spitting at him, cursing at him. Israeli defense forces are there as well. They blocked the ambulance, but eventually an ambulance came and took him. He was obviously a child in a traumatic state, injured and vulnerable. He also witnessed, right? We can't remove that. He witnessed his cousin being shot at and died in front of him before he got ran over. Insane. So despite his age, an obvious condition, right? His skull was fractured. They arrested him, interrogated him. They took him to the hospital. Like, we'll give it to them. They took him to the hospital for one night. One night. Bandaged his head. Took him afterwards to interrogation room. They interrogated the shit out of him. And the interrogation videos are also up on YouTube everywhere. You can go search them. And
Ya Allah.
I will describe it.
I'm sorry.
No, you're fine. I'll describe it. So again, trigger warning. He's hitting on his head saying, "I do not remember. Take me to a hospital. I do not remember." And then you have this Israeli police officer saying, "Yes, you do. You do remember. Stop lying." And Ahmad is saying, "Allah, please help me. God, please help me." The Israeli security force is saying, "Allah isn't here. Allah isn't going to help you." And then he curses at Allah, astaghfirullah al-azim.
You know, it's like, I'll just remind you, you know, because like most of our listeners are in America. And we understand that there's like, obviously there's situations, a lot of situations, especially with black and brown disenfranchised people where, you know, when there's a minor in custody, they usually don't, you know, we saw that with the New York Central Park Five. But there was no attorney, and like there was no attorney for him, there was no guardian, and he kept saying the same thing, "I don't remember," and they didn't stop, they kept shouting. And it wasn't because, like, at the end of the day, I'm sorry, but it wasn't about what he remembers, it's about what the state needed him to believe. Sorry to cut you off. Keep going.
No, you're perfect. Yeah, you set that perfectly. And this went on for hours, bro. Like, the interrogation videos, you can find, it's hours. And you can see at the end, he's just hitting his head, which had a fracture. His skull is fractured. So he's hitting his head saying, "I don't remember. Am I going crazy? Am I crazy now? Am I crazy?" A 13-year-old boy thinking he's going crazy because they're trying to feed him what they want him to say. And he's like, "No, that's not what happened. I don't remember." Obviously traumatic, obviously vulnerable, out, like, he just got ran over, right? His leg, you can't even see a cast on his leg, which always, like, confused me because I saw his leg behind his head, what happened
literally
there.
Literally.
Yeah, so confusing. And this went on for hours. Eventually, he never spoke. He never said that, "Oh, I did this, my cousin did one too." Nope. Never confessed. No confession ever happened, even under coercive tactics. And when this video came out, I feel like this was what, you know, people were like, this is crazy. This is what led to, like, international condemnation, right? But that doesn't matter if you're Israel, does it, Hiba?
Of course not. No DD for them.
Nothing. And because during that time, right, before Ben-Gavir changed the law, you weren't allowed to keep or detain, or not detain, sorry, to take a child to court unless they were 15. So instead of letting this 13-year-old boy go, maybe put him on house arrest, you know, maybe come back, take him to the hospital, wait for him to think, understand what happened, you know, go through it mentally, they decided to keep him under administrative detention and kept renewing it. Every 6 months, kept renewing it until he turned 15. So by the age of 13 to 15, this boy, little boy, he was, and mashallah, you guys, if y'all, like, he was
such the prettiest beautiful boy.
His eyes, like, his eyes are what torture me, because you can
remind me.
I know. It's so sad. It's so fucked because you can see year by year the light in his eyes disappearing.
And like, I don't know. So it's like, I just think it's so fucked. It's so fucked because like the fact that they kept continuing to instead of like, you know, like you'd see like Israel, right? The most democratic country, most moral country in the world that has a jail system for children, for minors.
Military jail.
That doesn't exist anywhere. Not even in America. We don't even have that.
Yeah, like...
Not even in America, the most fucked country next to Israel. We don't have prisons for children. Or like a justice system specifically for children. We have juvenile law, sure. But that is focused on rehabilitation. It's focused on whether or not the child knew better, whether or not they can be tried as an adult specifically, because if they knew better, that means they had the like wherewithal to act as an adult, and then they get tried in criminal court like everyone else. But if they're not, they're children, and their whole thing is to get them better. You know, unless you're like black or brown, but you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm. And we have bonds. Like even if, and I'm not trying to, you know, minimize what specifically black people and black youth have to go through in America. It's fucked. Obviously, it's very, very horrible. If you're walking and you fit the description, which, you know, usually there, it's always, oh, it's a black person, so here you go, and they pick them off the street. It's disgusting. But we have bail. Right? Like we get bail set out. Even if you're a murderer, even if you did something disgusting, if you had the money, if you had, you know, whatever, you could still be bailed out until your court date. We don't even have that as Palestinians. They do not even have that as Palestinians living under occupation. They are just stuck in administrative detention for 6 months. Even though if you look at their laws that is written down, they're supposed to have due process, especially if you're a child. You're not supposed to be detained for over 72 hours unless a judge specifically states so. So in this case with Ahmed Manasra, he never got to see a judge throughout the 2 years he was held, kidnapped. I say kidnapped because administrative detention is just that. It's a kidnapping. They can renew it as many times as they want, and they've done it multiple times. We have over, I believe, 10,000 Palestinians under administrative detention as we speak. But yeah, that's how Ahmed stayed under administrative detention until the trial and sentencing. Actually, I'm sorry about correction. Because of Ahmed Manasra, I don't know why it freaking... Sorry, I'm sleepy.
Totally sleepy, baby.
Specifically, because of Ahmed Manasra's case, this is when they changed Israeli law and said, you know what? Not 15, we're gonna put it down to 14. They specifically changed Israeli law to make it legal to set a child out for trial and for murder and life sentences at 14, specifically for Ahmed's case. And this was pushed by Ben Gavir and Smotrich. So that says a lot, is all I'm gonna say.
Yep. And as soon as he turned 14, he was then initially convicted of attempted murder in 2016. Before we talk about the actual trial, right? Like, I just want to talk about it like from like the broad framework, kind of that, like, it, right? We always say like, oh, look at the legal system failed these people, or like, oh, look at the system failed this person. And it's not a failure. It's like literally it did what it was supposed to do. And what happened in that courtroom wasn't a miscarriage of justice. It was the justice system performing its intended function to take a Palestinian child who had survived, although they wanted him dead, and make sure he would never survive again. And he was, yes, so he was initially charged with attempted murder in 2016. Let's be exact here, right? Ahmad did not stab anyone. His cousin Hassan, Allah yirhamu, was Allah the yirhamu. One who allegedly committed the attack and was subsequently killed on the spot. Ahmad ran, and he was hit by a car, and then he was beaten and screamed at, and then filmed, bleeding, and then and was disoriented. But he was charged with attempted murder. Why? Because you see, you know, Petra and settler colonialism and like context of settler law, presence is enough. You know, it's kind of like, think about it, it's kind of like the same logic that enables Israel to bomb an apartment building because one person allegedly connected to Hamas lives two floors below. You know? Mm-hmm. And what the court argued was that his presence constituted complicity. And it's a wide, like, I we can get into like the legal doctrine of it, but it's called the joint criminal enterprise logic, and it's a widely criticized doctrine, and it was used in the Yugoslavia tribunal to prosecute group-based crimes, but those were all adults, and in that case in Yugoslavia, the doctrine required 1, a shared intent, 2, a common plan, and 3, affirmative contribution. But none of that was shown with Ahmad because it didn't need to be. The Israeli court wasn't interested in precedent under international law. And it was just focused on, you know, establishing its sovereignty. And under that sovereignty, Palestinian children are not legally differentiated from adult militants and are not differentiated from innocent men or militants or you know, rock throwers or mothers or babies. Like, there's just no distinction, right? So, like I said, Ahmad did not stab anyone. Ahmad was hit by a car. He was filmed bleeding, right? There's more than enough proof of what happened. So there's that. He was also, I mean, I don't think we need to say this, but he was also, you know, tried in an adult criminal court. But yeah.
Adult duh. Military court.
Yep. Military Not, court.
Which, what is the percentage of?
99.9% of conviction rate for in military courts, specifically in the West Bank. But I'm curious, Petra.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes when we speak to the Zionist, sorry, I'm a Zionist. Zionist.
She meant Zionist, y'all.
I literally meant Zionist. What are you guys talking about? About apartheid, and they're like, well, East Jerusalem, you know, they have citizenship. Mm. Well, if they have citizenship, Petra, wouldn't that mean that he would be charged? He would be tried in civilian court. Why was he in military court?
There's no apartheid in Israel. He didn't apply for citizenship. Like, it's not Israel's fault, you know? Like, he, as a 12, 13-year-old little kid, he should have applied for citizenship. Mm-hmm. So when he did this act, he could have went to, like, civil court. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, but that's another example, right?
Mm-hmm.
So Ahmad, as a Jerusalem resident, was supposed to be under civilian jurisdiction. But mm-hmm. the state made an exception, right? On the grounds that the alleged crime was political in nature. And they basically called it a security threat. Mm-hmm. And he was 14. His cousin was dead. There was no evidence that he stabbed anyone. But his trial was still treated as an adult terror case. And...
I think it's so fucked. I'm so, go ahead.
Please go.
You know what irks me so much is, like, during his trial and sentencing, they came out and said, you're convicted of attempted murder. We know, like, the court literally came out and said he did not stab anyone, but his presence and actions after the incident constituted complicity. His actions after the incident, let me read that again. Actions during and after the incident consisted with complicity. Huh?
Mm-hmm.
Being ran over because you saw your cousin being shot at, you're complicit. Khalas.
The court ruling, quote, like I'm literally reading from the case, right? I translated it. It's okay. There is no evidence that Ahmed Manasra physically stabbed any of the victims. Mm-hmm. And the defendant did not carry out the stabbing himself.
Hmm.
That should have ended it.
But here's 12 years.
Mm-hmm.
And mind you, right, Hiba, like these settlers didn't even, they weren't killed, right? They were injured. They lived. Nothing happened to them, right?
None. Nothing. I mean, yeah, they survived, unfortunately. That was just a joke. I meant Zionist, you guys.
She meant Zionist.
I literally meant Zionist.
Come on, bro. She's Palestinian. She can't be anti-Semitic.
I'm literally a Semite.
Let me stop before people start actually thinking that that's a good thing to say.
So stop saying that, you guys. Please. Stop. You sound sorry. So...
But yeah, I cut you off. Please finish.
No, girl, y'all sound dumb as hell when y'all say that. I'm going on a freaking rant right now because it's a freaking linguistic term. Stop it. Stop it. We never consider ourselves Semites in the first place. نحن عرب. خلاص. Anyways, sorry. Okay.
Rant over.
Just stop saying that. Also stop saying that there's no Hamas in the West Bank, please. Okay. Fucking idiots. Anyways, not all of you. Some of you are cute. It's still idiots, but cute. Anyways, this is what they said the court used to justify, right? As Petra said, but I'm going to add a little bit more to that, right? Even if he did not stab, his behavior expresses identification with the act, right? Identification with the act. No, not execution, not preparation, identification. And this is how they criminalize presence and effect. And this is how they were able to convert a child's silence and confusion and head trauma into complicity, right? They don't need what you did. They just need what they can say that you felt, right? So basically, mm-hmm. what they started charging him with, what they charged him and convicted him with, was how he felt, right? And it became psychic. Like, his intent was psychic. Like, they were like, bro, subhanAllah, they were like, Salem witch trials, who, right? Because, I'm sorry, like, they weren't punishing him for what he did, but for what he supposedly resonated with, for what they imagined passed through his fucking head.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, and then they also said he should have fled or prevented the attack. He did flee. He did flee. Please, I'm so mad. He did flee. He ran.
And guess what? What happened when he ran, Hiba?
But they fucking ran him over.
Oh my god. Yeah, like this case. Also,
I'm sorry, prevented the attack. Okay, sure. What do you expect a 13-year-old to do?
They never even, like, they didn't even prove that Hassan did this, yes. either. Like, with surveillance or anything. It was just hearsay. Like, yeah, he did it. We know he did it.
Like, oh my god, okay. And like I said, again, quote unquote, the court accepts that the defendant did not wield a knife and that no direct attack was carried out by him.
You're guilty even if you're innocent. That's how it is in, you know, mm-hmm. Palestine. But yeah, they sentenced him to 12 years in prison. When this happened, everything came out. I feel like this was not one of the first cases, but within our, like, lifetimes, right? We've seen Muhammad al-Durra, alayhi rahmah. We've seen all of these cases. We were young. But this is one of the first cases that I remember so vividly. I was, like, 18, 19, I don't, maybe 17. And I remember the, like, the widespread campaigns and protests because of how horrible the interrogation was, because he was a child, because of him being ran over, it became international. Like, this was one of the first cases in my lifetimes that went international. And it was mostly because he was a minor. But yeah, it was like very widespread. It was, yeah, I feel like Ahmed Manasra and Mohammed Al-Durra are like two of the biggest, I call this resistance, like regardless of the facts, but it caused a widespread protest. It caused people to remember Palestine when, you know, Gaza wasn't being bombed, which usually is the only time people remember Palestine, but I'll digress. And it was, the outrage stemmed from, he was a minor, just the violent nature of his arrest and interrogation, the lack of due process, which we've seen from Israel over and over and over again, and the like the extreme sentencing of a child who was found not guilty of committing said crime, but complicit in it. Because of this outrage, which, you know, Amnesty International, the UN, so many people were always out on the streets talking about Ahmed Manasra. So many petitions were signed. It did change something, right? Unfortunately, not a lot, but it did. It was able to reduce his sentence from 12 years to 9.5 years, which is still freaking crazy. And the court came out and said it's because regardless if he did it or not, he's still sentenced under terrorism, and that is always going to be a threat for Israel, and he needs to serve these years.
Yep.
Which is crazy, crazy, crazy. Yeah.
Oh, so sorry. I just, yeah.
Yeah, I know. This is such a tough case.
I'm so...
You're rethinking, you're remembering everything.
It's the video. It's just the video.
I know.
And it's not even the video that we're thinking. It's him being interrogated, him hitting his head.
You know, they made parodies of the video. Yeah. You know, the video where he's on the ground? Israelis started making parodies of it like a week after. But, you know, there's some cute Israelis, Habibti.
I mean, yeah, like they're not... They didn't choose to be born in Israel, you guys.
It's not their fault. We have like leftists here.
There's like anti-Zionist Jews. We love our two allies. Anyways, so let's talk about his life in prison. Ahmad didn't get sick, right? He was made unwell slowly, deliberately. And to be clear, Petra and I, we're not here to grieve his condition. We're here to prove its function in you know, in Israel case, right? So isolation wasn't a disciplinary measure, it was an ontological strategy. Now, Petra, I'm gonna see if do you remember what ontological means.
I do, but can you repeat it for our cute audience that loves to hear your voice?
Yep. Chat, that means no.
No, well, I do. I'm talking with you. But like, what if someone just came and like listened to this episode?
Right. Okay. The term ontological comes from ontology, which is the branch of philosophy that studies the nature of like your being, your existence, your reality. So when something is ontological, it's not about what happens to you. It's about what you are, your essence, your identity, your status as a subject, whether you're recognized as real, human, or valid in the first place, right? So for an example, right, is that an ontological status refers to your existential standing. Are you a person, an object, a threat, a ghost, a citizen? And it means usually like it's about how power defines being itself, right? And so it's one of my favorite like topics to learn, right? Because as the Palestinian identity is so trauma ridden, and it's so it just it's really sad.
But since day one, like I'm sorry, Hiba, we always bring up Muhammad Durra, and I feel like because we're almost the same age, right? That's one of our first memories as a Palestinian. I remember, like, it's probably one of my earliest memories too. I remember I was like four. My parents are like sitting on the couch. My dad is chain smoking, and we see a little kid, and it's being televised, and it's again run for hours, and we're all waiting. We're not waiting for them to be rescued. We never wait for a Palestinian child to ever be rescued. We're literally waiting for their death. And it's like ingrained in you, you know?
And like full, I hate to say it, fucking like full circle, but like his other son got martyred.
Yes.
In this war, too. In the genocide. But I said the word ontological function, right? And this is the ontological function of something. It refers to the role it plays in establishing, maintaining, or altering the structure of being, how we categorize what's real, who's human, what exists. And it's, yeah, it's how basically something defines reality, or how it, you know, assigns or denies value or existence to beings or things or groups. Right. So I just wanted to kind of give you guys like a little bit of a summary, because I use this word a lot and some people, you know, may not know what it means. I'll keep repeating it. I don't mind. So they isolated him. And like I said, it was an ontological strategy, right? So from the moment he entered prison, Ahmad was placed in solitary confinement. And it wasn't as a punishment for his behavior, but it was preemptive containment. And he had already become too symbolic, right? This video of him went viral. There were international outcries. There were people protesting. Israelis were protesting. He was too visible, too alive, and too unfinished, right? And solitary confinement was like meant to silence him before he could narrate his own case. And so they put him in a cell, right? With no clocks, no noise, no human contact, nothing to hold on to. And they left him there again and again for years. Not like F-O-R years, F-O-U-R years. Like 4 years cumulatively. From adolescence to early adulthood. And I imagined like he had no memory that could form a full sentence by that time.
Yeah. And just like to put this into perspective, right, Hiba, international law, the UN, although like solitary confinement isn't banned officially, but there are rules, right, under international law, under the UN, under CAT, which is Convention Against Torture, there's three specific rules, right? Number one, solitary confinement should only be 22 hours or more a day without meaningful human contact. That's what, you know, it is. You cannot have solitary confinement for 15 consecutive days. So anything that's over 15 consecutive days is prohibited under the UN and international law. And this actually came from Nelson Mandela. Rule 45, a very important one, especially for this case, children under 18 years old or people with a mental or physical disability must never have solitary confinement. And then the last one, solitary confinement that amounts to torture or cruel and inhumane or degrading treatment is absolutely prohibited under international law. So not only was this an underage kid, right, who was held 1, 2, 3, 4 consecutive years in solitary confinement, he also had a mental disability that it formed because of them. It's just it's freaking insane. Like, if 15 days is hard, like, I'm sorry, when I'm in the house and I have like my kids by myself and I don't speak to an actual adult like throughout the day, I feel like I'm about to go insane. So imagine being held as a 13, 14 year old throughout all of your childhood, your adolescent years, just between four walls. And it got so bad, his lawyer, you know, had come out where he, when he would have a court date, because they kept appealing and it kept getting denied, he would no longer want to go to the court dates. He would no longer want to see his family members. They just kept him in there. And he would refuse to go to his own court dates because of it.
It's sensory deprivation, Petra.
It's insane. Like, I can't. I could never. Like, even, you know how some people do the sensory deprivation for, like, thrills and stuff? Mm-hmm. I couldn't even fathom, like, 2 hours of that. I can't. Plus, like, claustrophobia. Like, imagine, like, being held in that cell as a 13, 14-year-old who cannot remember anything. Like, he literally got hit on the head. Nothing. No one helped him out. And then you're stuck. Just your thoughts that you can't even remember sitting there for 4 years. Four consecutive years as a baby.
It's... Like I said, I think that he... I genuinely believe that he couldn't even manage to form a memory, like form a full sentence, right? Like of what his memory was before he went into solitary confinement, because we realized that schizophrenia was the outcome that they wanted, right? And it's always described as a tragedy, that his like mental health collapse was like a tragedy. But it's almost like it wasn't incidental, right? Mm-mm. The Israeli prison system didn't just witness his like deterioration; it engineered the conditions for it. And when it succeeded, it used the outcome to justify holding him longer. Right.
Oh, so my God, that's insane. I didn't think about that.
Right, and so by 2022, after spending years in confinement, Ahmed was diagnosed with schizophrenia. He showed signs of psychosis, depression, suicidality, withdrawal. His legal team submitted countless expert psychiatric evaluations to the court. They appealed for early release. They talked about international law, medical care, basic humanitarian principles. Obviously, the court denied it. All it was from the Israeli courts was that it was like a confirmation of what Israel uses as carceral architecture to dismantle unwanted political symbols, people who didn't even consent to be them.
It's just so heartbreaking. Like every time you think about it, it just gets worse and worse.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and like even after all of that, they denied everything. They denied his early release. They denied him house arrest. They denied him parole. Even after the UN talked about it, Amnesty International talked about it. Everyone was taught, every human rights organization, you know, Defense for Children International, everyone petitioned for his release.
Like, and do you remember the hashtag? Hashtag Free Ahmed Manasra.
Free Ahmed Manasra, yeah. Yeah, and here's another thing. If you're a Palestinian or have been a pro-Palestinian for a while, you would know this. Every single time we would hear, like, ceasefire talks and prisoner exchange and da-da, the first thing any Palestinian asks about is always, what about Ahmed Manasra?
Mm-hmm.
Has always been that. Remember Hiba? Every single time.
It was the only one we were like...
And then we would literally stay up waiting for the list of like the prisoners or hostages then, like, to come out. And then the like despair when Ahmed isn't there.
And then like we like, is it a sigh? And then like you take a breath and is it a sigh of relief? Is it not? Because like what kind of life is he entering in? Like what kind of life is he coming out of? And we'll talk about that, right? Like, yeah, I don't know.
It's rough.
It's
like,
just fucked. Yeah,
and we won't like, I feel like we won't ever know what he went through in those 9.5 years, almost 10 years. He spent all of his adolescent years and early adult years in that prison, and God knows what Israel did, especially after October 7th. We know for a fact right now that every single prisoner that was there prior to October 7th has been tortured. So God knows what these pigs did to this kid. I don't think we're gonna ever get like a telltale all by Ahmed. Like, I don't think that's ever gonna happen. I don't think he even fathoms what the fuck happened to him.
No, and I hope he doesn't.
I do too. Like,
that's so fucked.
It's bittersweet.
It's so disgusting. It's so disgusting to say, because everybody should have the knowledge and the wherewithal to understand what happened to them, the agency to understand what happened to them, to take ownership or reject what happened to them. But yeah, I don't know. It's a really fucked thing to say. So I will say that that's really fucked on my part. But like, what, you know, like I said, I think what's like important that I kind of want to highlight, right, is the fact that I kind of want to talk about the like international outcry, because like you just talked about it too, right? But like there were like mental health experts signing open letters, and like if you guys, like, I don't know if people who are maybe don't remember this or don't know what we're talking about, think of like Sheikh Jarrah in 2021, mm-hmm. but bigger, right? Because it wasn't everywhere. Like a Jew stealing someone's house and saying it's mine now, right? It's literally like a child who's been now diagnosed with schizophrenia. You have mental health experts globally signing letters, NGOs, formal reports to the UN, the hashtag mobilization, and unfortunately, like, what's so sad about it is that what the international advocacy did was put him under a spotlight.
Sadly.
And once he became a symbol, the logic of deterrence escalated, and releasing him would have been read as a submission. And so the state, right, Israel, did what it always does. It used visibility to justify further containment. And I talked a little bit about this with Khalida, and how they just kept, mm-hmm. like, you know, breaking her soul, breaking her ego, breaking her, like, the fact that she was an icon and she kept being imprisoned. They do it because it means more to release them than to, you know, keep them in, because it shows that they, I guess, it shows that they lost. It shows that they, you know, are giving a symbol back to the people. There's a reason why Marwan Barghouti hasn't been released yet, you know?
Or Dr. Abu Sophia.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And
it's so fucked. I hate mm-hmm. it, because you're so right. Every single time we place a spotlight and we highlight one of our hostages, our Palestinian hostages, it's like we push them to keep them longer. So you're damned if you do or damned if you don't. Right. If you speak about them, they're going to keep them longer. They're going to like use your protest, your voice, your everything to convince their people this is why we need to keep them. And if you forget about them and you don't talk about them, they also win, because now we're forgotten.
Yeah. I think it's really fucked. It's really fucked, because it, like, and it people really tried, and it hurt him in the end, and he'll never know, right? Or never want to know. I wouldn't want to know. Imagine you suffering in prison all these years, and every time, you know, a prison guard would come and hurt you more, and it's because your name ended up on a news article. Would you want to know, Petra? Like, oh, that the reason you got beat today was because, you know, some people like mentioned you. Just let me disappear, kind of, you know? I don't know. That's me.
And it could be like a, you know, like a coping mechanism. We hear it often with, you know, victims, right? Whether it's SA, any type of abuse, physical or mental, they have a coping mechanism. And a lot of them, it's to shut they shut it out, right? They put it in like a little neat corner. Yeah, they avoid it. Yeah, a little corner in their brains, and then they detach themselves and find something else. Unfortunately for Ahmad,
like being constantly reminded about something, like I said earlier, you didn't even consent to being. He became this like symbol or this beacon of like, oh, look at how is like they made him into this martyr, and he didn't even consent to do it. He was 13.
Yeah.
You know?
Damn, I didn't even think of it like that.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, and you know, like I said, he became a symbol, but symbols don't get parole hearings, and they don't get they don't like give interviews, and they don't, you know, they just exist as it was. Everyone thinks of Ahmad Manassa, they think of that 13-year-old boy. They don't think about the 13 to, you know,
23.
Right? Like his story, like they froze him in time. Mm-hmm. The 13-year-old boy bleeding on camera, tried in adult court, but psychologically dismantled under Israeli like care, and they martyred him, and cuz he was frozen and stale at that time. And I think it's just unfortunate. It's just so unfortunate the way that he did it. And by the time that narrative maybe was able to come, like was ready to be amplified by him, Ahmad was no longer capable of narrating it himself.
And you know, the way like you saying it like that, now because I always had a feeling like it always used to, like irk that like my insides used to churn anytime anyone would talk about Ahmad, even if they were Palestinian, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I would never, I'm like, why do I feel like that? Is it because I'm like, no, this is my, like, this is my person, this is my beacon? But the way you just spoke about it,
girl,
it's because of that. It's
I have a rant coming. Don't you worry.
You're 100. You're like, 100%.
I'm a rant. Don't you worry. I'm writing it down. I have a rant coming.
Not only that, right, Hiba? People now probably expect so much of this tortured little young man who's 23. He's 10 years of his life stolen. They expect so much of him. The amount of people I've heard saying, oh, I want to talk to Ahmad and see what he went through.
Let's get him on a TikTok live.
Let's hear this. And I'm just like, can y'all leave this man alone? Like, he isn't even able to go to a hospital. He's probably doesn't even remember any of this crap. Can y'all leave this man alone? Like, you've put into words what I've been feeling for the past 10 years, but never could put my finger on it.
I'm going to highlight it for you too. Hind Rajab.
Oh, don't get me
Hind
started.
Hind Rajab was a little girl who was didn't probably understand even like the whole, she probably did not understand the severity of the situation.
She was five.
She didn't understand that, you know, she was like, and it's going to get really raw, so I'm sorry right now, you guys, but like.
No, please do.
Sitting in the car, not really understanding maybe, because you, mm-hmm. you have a five-year-old, not mm-hmm. really understanding what death is. Mama Ume or Baba right? Wake up. Stop sleeping. I'm hungry. Mm-hmm. Right? What's that smell? Why does it smell bad?
Like, even in the call, like, right? She always says, I'm alone. She doesn't say, like, my family is gone. She says, I'm alone. That's another thing, because you think you're alone. You don't think that your mom and dad aren't, like, they're here, but they're not here. She can't even put it into words. Ugh, like, ya Allah.
And then the fact that like she didn't even fully because 5-year-old cognitive, like, you know, we know the way that cognition works, we know the child behavior. She didn't understand the severity of the situation. She didn't understand what any of it was. And now her death, her name, her death, all of it is being bastardized by, unfortunately, our movement, our people, mm-hmm. our cause, right? And I got to the point where I genuinely crashed out on live. I don't know if you were there.
I've done it before too.
I say, and like these people get so emotional right? And I think, like, it's fine. I understand the emotions.
Trust me, we've all gone, you know, bro,
we've crashed out. We've bought, like, you and I have had so... Girl, I've had to call you cussing you out because of, like, how, you know, impacted you were, like, right?
Yeah.
And how it was affecting your life. And same with me. And so, like, emotions aren't bad. But when you sit there and, like, bastardize the names of our martyrs,
yeah,
like you've symbolized them, you've made them into these things, and like then you continue to repeat their names. They're like,
and it's always that one, like they
got it. It's like literally like they go and repeat their names to the worst fucking like people, Twitter threads, and Zionists always, on TikTok.
And this is the one. It's always one, right? It's always one. Like they don't know any other martyr.
They don't even know anyone. No,
they don't know.
No.
What about Hinz Rajab? And it's like, okay, name another one.
Yeah, maybe maybe they'll mention Noor. Maybe.
Or Ahmed al-Najjar, the you know the beheaded baby. The two, those are the two names. Shuru, maybe. You know, they'll maybe.
Right, but you know, people really don't know Shuru. And plus, girl, can an ally pronounce Shuru? Anyways, but it's like they go to the give it space, or they I believe in energy, right? I don't know, maybe like y'all can call me whatever the fuck you want. I believe in energy, and I believe in the way that we say things, whether with good intent, bad intent, no intent, you know, it doesn't matter. Once it leaves your mouth, like it's tainted, right? Because silence is bliss. I believe you know this about me. And so I think that once you've already mentioned her name in a debate or in a point or in a, oh, you guys killed Hind Rajab, she has 27 shots. Like, are you fucking kidding me? Because what is the Zionist going to respond? What do they respond, Petra? Go ahead, let's play it out. How do they respond, Zionist?
The mask shouldn't have been there. Oh, it was an accident. It was unfortunate.
So you give them like this, you give them this fuel, ammo to continue to kill her, to continue to dehumanize her, to demoralize her, and then you get triggered by their response.
And then in the same breath, right, Hiba, these same like pro-Palis or Palestinians, in the same breath, when a Zionist wants to say like something about an October 7th victim, they're like, oh my God, it happened years ago. Like, you guys are giving them ammo to and talk like, badly about our people, and then to throw back everything you're saying to them. Why I'm talk sorry, about our martyrs to Zionists?
And I've said this before. Damna man narkhis. Qadiyatna man narkhis. Watanitna man narkhis. Stop fucking selling it. Like, stop giving it away. We're not, our blood isn't cheap. Our names aren't cheap. There's like, you know, our friend Echo. He mentioned this to me once. And like, it was like a funny conversation once, right? He was explaining to me, like, he's like, oh yeah, when growing up, like, because like, you know, where he grew up, he's like, yeah. Like boys, you don't even tell your guy friends your mom or your sister's name, because you have ghire over them. You don't even want, like, because you know how boys joke around.
Yeah.
You don't even want them to just joke around about her. So you don't even say her name.
Yep.
And like, this is what we've led to. It's just so...
Yeah. Ugh. And Hiba, right, you've been there throughout like the humanized Gaza thing, and it was specifically about two things, right? And like, I know we've taken a bit of a segue about Ahmed Manasra. We promise to all, finish
you
it know, up.
You guys
about, it is like, it's I'm all sorry. Connected.
It's all connected. Like, and also like I said, y'all are here for our analysis, right? Yeah, but go ahead.
Yeah, but like the reason for it, and this is why I hold it so dearly to me, it's because of two reasons. One is our people are not cheap, whether they're Palestinians in West Bank, East Jerusalem, Gaza, or they're in Lebanon fighting for our cause, or in Yemen, or any of these countries, and they're fighting for Palestine. Every single one of these people had a name. You should know it. It's not 50,000 plus. It's 50,000 people. It's not women and children. It's our people that are dying at the hands of this apartheid and occupation and all of the shitty things Israel is. And number two, it's because of this, right? I never, like, I'm sorry, when I saw Hind, right? And by the way, when we're talking about Hind, we're not, not to you, Macklemore, if you ever listen to this, we love you, W. Hinshall.
No, I love him. Hinshall number two was better.
I think,
girl, remember when I called you crying and I'm like, bitch, I just became a batija. I was so mad. I was so mad because I literally called this girl crying and I'm like, girl, they got me. The allies got me because it was so good.
I'm sorry. He won my heart with all of that. Mm-hmm. But it's because when I see a picture of Hind, I do not want to remember her last moment. I don't want to remember how she was brutally martyred. I do not want to remember her in a car with 27 plus shot wounds. I want to remember the person she was, her, you know, her laughs, what she used to like, what she didn't like. And this was the reason, like, because of TikTok, like, I'm sorry, again, venting and like ranting, but it's because of just hearing people saying, and Hind Rajab, and Ahmad al-Najjar, and this, and you killed this person, and like never actually commemorating them or remembering them in the way that they should be remembered. Because, right, if you died, if I died, I don't want people to be like, oh, Petra died, hopefully a fun way, skydiving or something, or Hiba died, you know, in a cute way. Not now, no, though, Hiba.
It's being too skinny.
Yeah, Hiba died because she was too skinny. She was too frail. Body, like, oh, she got anemia. The wind blew her away, mm-hmm. You know? I don't want, no one wants to be remembered like that. That's why we have eulogies, and that's why we go to like funerals and people talk about us. The same should be given to our martyrs. Our martyrs should not be Hind Rajab was killed this way, Muhammad al-Durra was killed this way. They had a life, and that's how they should be remembered. You shouldn't remember them with everything that they went through. You should remember them, their stories, and what you think a person would want to be remembered as. Like this podcast about specifically about Ahmed Manasra opened my eyes, because I like never could put my finger on it. I'm like, something about this case irks me, other than the Israelis and the Zios. Something about this irks me, and you put it into like the best way possible. I hope, right? I hope he gets the help he needs. He gets the hospital that he needs. He gets everything he needs.
I'm sorry, because I still want to go. I'm sorry.
Please do.
I'm still going to, like, because I think it really, you know, but assess and know how much it bothers me. And because we've talked about this for hours, about this, like, non-consensual symbolism, right?
Mm.
And Hind didn't say, make me your symbol. Hind didn't say, we are all Palestinian. Hind didn't say Intifada revolution. Hind said, come get me. I'm the only one left. They're shooting at me. And we didn't come. We didn't come. Not fast enough, not loud enough. And by the time we did, it was to bury whatever was left of her. And that's, you know, when she became a perfect icon, right? A little girl trapped, terrified. She was too young to blame and too dead to speak. And that's what makes her usable by the movement, right? Same with Ahmed. Ahmed never said, tell my story. He said, I don't remember. He said, please stop. He said, I want to see my mom. And when he couldn't speak anymore, like, you know, that's when we all collectively sat there and decided, oh, that meant something. Right? Mm. He didn't get to define what he meant. We did. And like, and it's so fucked, because in doing so, we did what the state couldn't finish, right? We turned him into something static, and something symbolic, something that, you know, we quoted him, we mourned him, you know, we branded him, but we did, not him, not Hind. And like, this is what happens when we turn Palestinian children into metaphors before they finished being people, right? We strip them of their own narration. We show, like, you know, quote unquote allies to wear their names like slogans, get tattoos of them, you know, while they're like living a privileged life, you know, while these allies know nothing about the systems that built their cages. We let like Western activists mourn them without, you know, acknowledging the complicity of their own governments. Or how many, you know, liberal Zionists say, oh, you know, Ahmed was failed by the system, while refusing to name what the system is. Or we let journalists call Hind a woman or a tragedy without calling her death an execution. And we let politicians who sit there and they're a little, you know, they have a little crack in their voice and there's, you know, they quote their words, mistranslated, by the way, mistranslated. Mm-hmm. And worst of all, we tell their peers, like the living Palestinian children watching all of this unfold, is that the only way you can be heard is if you're destroyed, if you die on camera, if you survive with scars deep enough to become a trend, to become exceptional. So, you know, to keep being quiet so that others can speak for you. And it's just like, we turn children into symbols without consent. We freeze them in their most violated, fucking violated, traumatic, like, state, right? We rob them of their complexity, and we assign them meaning that they never even knew. They never even knew, right? And like, this is how I believe, like, memory becomes demoralization. And like, this is when how martyrdom becomes like expectation. I don't know. And this is how, like, allies, activists, even Palestinians can end up repeating the violence even in mourning, right? Like, Ahmed's not a symbol. Hind is not this revolutionary icon. They were children. And what they deserved was not to be remembered, but they deserved to be protected. And we didn't do that. Sorry, rant over.
No, that was perfect. That was perfect. That, ugh, girl, if I had like the, you know, the sound bites with like the pause.
Girl, no, I'd hit you. I'd hit you.
I did it. Live, my pause, my applause. I don't know if you
I love your applause. That. Honestly, send me a voice note later.
Okay, I will. Every time you do something good. Like, girl, I have eat the, you know, the, and sleep.
Literally, like, I need, like, gold, you know, the stars. The like, gold the gold stars.
Hey, Petra, update. You went to sleep for 6 hours. Here's a gold star, Hiba.
Literally, I've been using them. You know, how I use pimple patches? Like, I literally got, like, star pimple patches to reward myself for so far.
Oh, my God.
Bro, this thing is crazy.
But it works. No, but, like, you ate, because that's exactly it. And what I wanted to say is, after his release, we're going to get back, right? He was released finally April 10th of 2025. I hope the world, including media, including us, including everyone, to allow him to get the help and to determine what he wants his life to be. He's only 23. He's young. He has his whole life ahead of him. I hope we as a collective allow him to get better and decide, right? If he wants to be, you know, continue fighting and continue a resistance. He never fought, you know, he wasn't. He was pushed into it by us. But if he wants to, that's up to him. And if he wants to sit and tend to his olive trees and forget any of this happened, we should allow him to do so. And this reminded me about our Palestinian hostages episode when we talked about Zakaria's Bedi. Remember when he was like, I wanted to be an actor. I did not want this life. Since day one, we had a theater. My mom used to help. But seeing everything unfold in front of me, I had to pick this instead of my goal, which was an actor.
Yep. And I think that's like, once a child or a person becomes a symbol, everyone gets to use their name, but like no one has to answer for what was done to them.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And like, let's talk about the conditions of Ahmed's release, right? So,
yeah.
You know, obviously the entire world was we literally, when we found out he was being released, like, we literally held our breaths. We were like, fuck, like, let's, like, he's not home yet. Like, we were literally holding our breaths.
Well, at first, right, it started because circulating, like, that
he was going to release on Friday.
His sentence is ending. He's been 9.5. And, like, my thing was, I'm not going to get my hopes up. I was like, you guys, you know how Israel is. Like, stay hopeful, but, you know, be careful. And it happened, right? But how did it happen, Hiba?
Yeah, so he was released. The day that he was released, Israeli authorities, just real quick, like, I don't know if most people don't know this, but Israeli authorities summoned him for another interrogation.
Mm-hmm.
They sent him back, like, they released him, and then they made him come back to the same station, to the same, like, doing, using the same tactics, with no charges, no explanation. And it was like, you now finally are breathing the air of something that's not your confined cell for the last decade. But just remember, it's our air. We're the one giving it to you. You're still under our control. And his family was waiting outside for him, outside of the prison, eager. And where was he, Petra?
Nowhere to be found. They did not release him to his family. They released him roughly 50 kilometers. Y'all do the, like, American math, because I can't right now.
What was it, 15?
50, 50.
50 kilometers. What is it? America. Okay, 30 kilometers. Okay, yeah. It's about 430. Like, I'll do like 30 miles.
30. Yeah, 30.
Good oh my job. God. No I Googled way. That. No yeah. way.
You okay. ate. Okay, okay. Pookie. 31.07 exactly.
I did it because of my marathons, but
like, W Hiba, actually, like, okay, I'm gonna start messaging you when I need to convert, because, like,
it's just kilometers, because, like, yeah, that's what we run in.
Okay, like, okay, okay.
Yeah. Go ahead, sorry.
But he was released 31 miles or 50 kilometers away from the prison into a separate area called Beer Sheba, or Beer Sheba, I believe, in American or, like, English. In English, my bad. 31 miles away. His family was eager, waiting. Like, there's even videos they released that where they're, like, going and asking, and they're like, oh, we don't know. And they, like, don't even speak to his family until someone in Beer Sheba, they called his mom. They're like, hey, we have your kid, right? This is Ahmed Wanasra. You guys were waiting for him. Where are you? We'll take him to you. So they literally, like, fucked it up for him on purpose, just to prove, exactly like what you said, we're always here. Like, we're even in your release, we're gonna fuck it up for you. Mm-hmm. Eventually, he got with his mom, his dad, and his lawyer. And if you guys remember Ahmed Manasra, the little cute innocent boy, the picture released, they obviously shaved his head, because that's a new tactic that they've been doing. Mm-hmm. He looks like a thin stick, nothing. It's skin and bones.
Yeah.
Malnutrition.
And, like, no, but you, like, it's like, but you see the torture. Like, how do you look, like, how does a person look so, so ghostly, but also so heavy?
Yeah, his eye, yeah. Like, that's the thing, his eyes have no life. Like, that's the first thing I mentioned, was, like, he, like, khalas, the life has been sucked out of him, and you can tell by his eyes. The eyes that were once, like, super bright, even during everything when he was, like, trying to remember. And throughout the years, throughout the 9.5 years, if you look at the pictures of him, you can see it slowly being drained from out of him. The life has been. After that, you know, they called him back to the police station, and did exactly what Hiba said. And then
what did they make him do?
Yeah, so he's
as
released.
Part of his condition.
Mm-hmm. He's on house arrest fully. They didn't give him a date when he's, like, no longer on house arrest, but he is. He can't leave his house. That he also, it was fined 180,000 shekels, which is roughly $50,000. Huh?
Yep.
Yeah. So, and mind you, his lawyer came out and was saying, we wish that the Israeli government will allow us to take him to specialized hospitals, for his mental state, for his malnutrition, for X, for Y, for Z. 2 hours later, they're like, you thought, you're on house arrest. You can't leave, not even to the hospital. They're also, neither him nor his family nor his lawyer is allowed to speak to any news outlet or do any interviews whatsoever at all.
Yep.
So is he really free?
No. Nope. Nope. So now Ahmad, right, was released in a world that had already used him.
Mm-hmm.
He's stuck at 13 bleeding on the street. And he wasn't released to heal. He wasn't released to liberate. He wasn't released because he served his time. He was released to disappear quietly, yeah. Tragically, without ceremony, right? Which is why they released him, in an unfamiliar area. But, he now lives with schizophrenia,
depression,
like, you know, with a reminder that this is his legacy, that this is the legacy of Israeli prisons and what they did to him. This is his confinement, schizophrenia. He can't organize, he can't speak, he can't represent himself in the campaigns that have been built around his name, because, you know, and I'm sorry, but the boy that they feared in 2015, the one who survived the car crash, the interrogation, court, confinement is gone. And what remains is like a name, a diagnosis, and, you know, silence that everyone can project meaning onto. And
the threat that they thought he was is no longer here, has never been here. Like, such a heavy, heavy, heavy topic. It really is. And just, there's like thousands of Ahmed Manasras out there.
Mm-hmm. It's just, he doesn't need to be remembered. He needs to be protected, right? Mm-hmm. And now that he's out, right, you'll hear less about him because his survival is like no longer cinematic. You know, there'll be no more like international, like, you know, movements calling for his release, right? Like, I don't know.
Petra, even have though,
you seen, even no. Now with him accessing medical care, have you seen, yep, these people who were saying, oh, where's Ahmed?
That's
signing
exactly,
any petition for that?
That's exactly what I was going to say. His lawyer, Khaled, I think his name is Khaled Zabarka. Right?
I don't know. It's
Zabarka, right?
Mm-hmm. I don't know how to pronounce it.
No,
I can read Zabarka. It in Arabic. If you send me the name in Arabic, I'll read it. But I can't.
It's Zabarka. No, you're right. Okay. Habuba, I don't ever second guess yourself. I love you more. But his lawyer said, we have to remain actively involved in advocating for Ahmad's well-being, and we must continue to make sure that the Israeli government allows him to go to hospitals. So, mm-hmm. This is what you guys can do, right? If you ever signed a petition, if you did any of this, you need to continue remembering that he still needs help. Even though he's no longer in the quote-unquote prison, he's still in prison.
Yeah.
In his mind, in his heart, and everything. And he still needs your help. Do not forget him just because he's released. Keep talking about him. Keep demanding the end of his house arrest so he can go get better. Because that's what we should have been advocating for. His betterness, not anything else.
So I think it's crazy because, like, the people who once held his face on protest signs aren't ready to hold the systems that broke him accountable. And you know, like I said, we'll be hearing less about him, right? It's no longer cinematic. It's no longer breaking news. He's no longer exceptional, right? But I just, silence is a choice.
Fuck it.
Mm-hmm. Silence is a choice. And for everyone listening, so is what you do next. If you know his name, then you know the system is still in place. You know, solitary confinement is still being used on Palestinian children, and you know that 99% of them are still being convicted in courts where their existence already is a crime. You know, the next Ahmad's already been born. He's been already profiled. He's already being watched. So what we're asking is don't turn him into another poster. Don't romanticize his pain. Don't reduce his schizophrenia to like a footnote or a tweet. Understand that his survival wasn't a victory, it's evidence, and it's evidence that hasn't been used yet. It's not a symbol, and his story is not a warning. It's a warning. I mean, it's a warning. It's a legal case, and it's a record of what happens when the world lets the law devour a child. And so what do we do now? Stop sanitizing your language. Name the violence that occurs. Fight for legal bans on solitary confinement. Go and fight for the release of his house arrest, as Petra said. Get him the medical treatment that he needs, but also track every child being held under military jurisdiction. Call for universal jurisdiction trial when domestic courts refuse accountability. Shut down the systems. Don't just mourn them. No, just don't mourn the ones they break. We don't protect Palestinian children by remembering them. We protect them by refusing to let their destruction happen again. And that's our obligation. You're so funny. I hate you.
I'm sorry, that freaking ate, bro. Oh my goodness. Hibba,
Petura.
please do everything Hibba just said, because that's like she's putting everything I've been feeling for the past like 2 to 3
Girl, you know I'm the
months.
messy one. You know I'm the messy one. When you're like, I don't want to
Girl.
say names, I'm like, I'll say the name. I'll
But
say it.
I haven't even like thought of what I'm feeling, but like you literally in this episode, everything I've been feeling for the past two, and I've been like, oh, it's probably like, defeatism, it's exhaustion from, but no, it's because we love speaking, but nothing ever gets done.
Nothing
We
comes out,
all
bro. It's people just want to like love hearing their voice, bro.
love talking, hearing our own voices, debating Zionist, but nothing is actively being done unless it's another headline story, like the 15 medics, like the children who are burnt in tents. Unless it's a headline story, no one cares. Not even our own advocates, sadly. But yeah, I mean, perfectly said and done, as always, Hibba. We have officially reached the end of the episode, and that means it's time to commemorate another martyr. But before I do so, I am very happy to announce that Humanize Gaza website and newsletter has been completed. We are going to start posting and sending out newsletters every day of every single martyr that we can get our hands on. I want to shout out a special shout out, because this is where I've been getting most of my research from, to a page. It's on Twitter and Instagram. So please, please, please go ahead and search them up. They have been posting nonstop ever since the genocide started. They're called Martyrs of Gaza. And Hiba actually, was the one who introduced me to one of them. And, I'm talking with them all the time. So every single story we get for Humanize Gaza. Oh, sorry, I'm getting sidetracked. But the
No,
website
it's
is
great. Tell us the website, baby.
humanizegaza.org. That's the website. And if you would like to register or subscribe to the newsletter, it's N as in Nancy, L as in, I don't know,
Liberty.
liberty.humanizegaza.org. And that's where you can sign up for the newsletter, and you can get it into your email every day. But yeah, so the stories we get, I feel like are even more meaningful because family members actually provide them, and they send a picture, they send the stories, and they ask Martyrs of Gaza to post. And then obviously, with permission, I share it out as well. And we're going to be collaborating. We're going to post everything that's theirs. Their Instagram will also be on the website, their Twitter, all of their information. And we're also going to have a TikTok posting every day there. So, whatever your social media is, please make sure you at least take 5 minutes out of your day and go check one of our martyrs out. Today's martyr, again, I feel like it's very fitting. It's going to be Waleed Khaled Abdullah Ahmad. Some of you guys might know the story, but not what fully happened. So let me start. He was 17 years old. His martyr date was March 23rd of 2025. He lived and was born in Silwad, occupied West Bank. So it's not Gaza. He is the first documented child who was killed in Israeli prisons after October 7th. So this is why his story is very important. Waleed was born and raised in the town of Silwad, which is northeast of Ramallah in occupied West Bank. From a young age, Waleed exhibited a vibrant spirit and love for life that was evident to everyone who knew him. He was a very dedicated student and known for his diligence and curiosity, and he harbored dreams that extended beyond the confines of his hometown. He was also an avid soccer enthusiast, and Waleed spent countless hours on the soccer field, showcasing not only his athletic power, but also his ability to work harmoniously with others. His passion for the game was unmatched, except for his commitment to his community, where he was seen as a beacon of hope for all Palestinian children. On September 30th of 2024, Waleed's life took a harrowing turn when he was arrested during a pre-dawn raid by Israeli forces. He was in his bed asleep. They accused him of offenses dating back to 2020, including allegedly throwing stones. Waleed and his family staunchly denied these claims. Despite the lack of formal charges, he was detained illegally under administrative detention and transferred to Megiddo prison in northern occupied Palestine 48, where he endured 6 months of incarceration under dire conditions. During his imprisonment, Waleed's health deteriorated significantly. He suffered from scabies and a disease called amyobic dysentery, which is exacerbated by the unsanitary conditions of the prison. An autopsy revealed that he had experienced extreme and likely prolonged malnutrition, which led to his severe weight and muscle loss. Unfortunately and tragically, on March 23rd of 2025, Waleed collapsed in the prison yard and passed away shortly after, marking him as the first Palestinian child to die in an Israeli custody since at least 1967. Yeah. Imagine dying because an Israeli person came and told you, hey, by the way, we're going to pick you up in 2024, but 4 years ago, you allegedly threw a rock. Never had a date, never had any charges set on him. Administrative detention, kept renewing it until, unfortunately, he died. Allah yirhamu.
Thank you for sharing that picture.
Of course, always. Always. But yeah, check out Humanize Gaza, where we will continue posting every single martyr, even prior to October 7th, because we know, we all know. And it's not just Palestine. We always are going to remember our Lebanese brothers and sisters, our Yemeni brothers and sisters who have been martyred for the Palestinian cause. We're never going to forget them. None of our people are numbers. Their blood is not cheap, like Hiba loves to say, and I definitely agree with her. They are people, and we need to humanize them and remind people it's not 50,000 plus. It's Waleed, it's Hind, it's Ahmad, it's Shuru. Every single name you can remember. Shuru.
If you're going to bastardize our names, at least try to fucking have the decency to pronounce them correctly.
Yes, please. Please okay. do. But yeah, thank you so much, Hiba.
Thank you, Katura.
I think you did a phenomenal job.
You truly were amazing.
No, like I'm not even saying it to you just because of you. You put into words what I've been feeling for the past 2 months and just couldn't. Like I couldn't, you know? I couldn't put it into words. My other half.
I love you. I love you so much.
And thank you, everyone, for listening to us. Please take Hiba's advice. She said it beautifully. Stop symbolizing our people for things that they are not doing. You do something about it. We are the ones who have freedom. We're the ones who should be fighting for them, not them.
We're the ones consenting to do this, not them.
Mm-hmm.
So stop freezing us. That's it. In our most traumatic state, that's all. But yeah. Bye, guys. See you next week.
Bye.